Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.
Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Network. This show is going out live on November 1st, 2016, which of course is All Saints Day. I hope everybody had a good Halloween last night. I'm your host, Paul John Roach, and I'm here at Unity Fort Worth in a still sultry Texas. We're waiting for the temperatures to drop into the 70s. They promised to do that on Thursday. Can't wait. But we can't complain. At least we don't freeze to death here in Texas. Today I'm talking with a long-term psychotherapist, also a meditation group leader and author, Ruth Cherry, PhD. And her new book is called Accepting Unconditional Love, which is both an honestly told description of her own journey, as well as a handbook to allow love to be an actuality in our lives, as well as an aspiration. So it's a joy to welcome Ruth to today's show. Glad you're with us.
Good morning. I'm glad to be with you.
It's a lovely book. You know, half of it is a sort of a workbook it reminds me a little bit about the Course in Miracles, because you have various sentences that we can just open to at random, if you like, and let them be our meditation for the day. And then the first half of the book is more of a description of all the principles that you lay out, plus your own journey, right? And you've been on quite a journey, and I'm sure that has impelled, I know it has, it's impelled a lot of what you write about in the book. Do you want to talk a little bit about your own healing journey?
Yes, thank you. This really has been the basis, the foundation for my writing. My first book, this is a two-book set. The first book is Living in the Flow, Practicing Vibrational Alignment. So in January of 2014, I was diagnosed with MS. And I was blown away. I was horrified. I didn't want that label. I didn't like that. I didn't know how to cope. You've heard of some people who get a devastating diagnosis, and right away they say, well, I'm going to overcome this. Well, that wasn't me. It threw me on my keister for 3 months. I woke up every morning, and I said, MS? Me? I couldn't believe that had happened. And all of the medical personnel that I encountered, the home health care nurses, the doctors, they were all wonderful, the physical therapists, but all of them had seen MS patients decline. And not one of them said, you're going to do this too, but I could feel it, you know, I could just sense that they were supportive and they were caring, but nobody said, you can beat this, you can heal yourself. And so after 3 months, it's like I woke up and I said, wait, I don't want to be doomed. I don't want my life to end now. And I thought, I'm going to heal this, but rather I know I allow healing. I know that I don't do the healing myself. So the first part of Living in the Flow, Practicing Vibrational Alignment, is 7 months of my journal writing while I came to terms with having that diagnosis. And, of course, what I had to do was to reach inside, because there was nobody outside saying, I have a way out of this. I had to go deeper and deeper inside. And I am so glad I had a solid meditation practice already in line on those days, because I went deeper inside myself than I have ever been, that I think I could get on my own by willing it. Getting that diagnosis tore a hole in the heart, in my heart, and I didn't know what to do. I had to surrender. It wasn't a choice. I had to surrender to go inside and say, please, somebody show me a way, show me a path, show me how I'm going to move through this. And I meditated 45 minutes twice a day. I still do, 7 in the morning and at noon. And I found an anchor inside myself, in my deepest center. And what I found by going more and more deeply inside is that there is a healer inside me. I mean, I'm a psychologist. I practiced for over 40 years. So I sort of know what I'm doing as far as the psychology end of it goes.
Right, right.
But when I went inside, there's a better healer, a better therapist inside me than even my mind knows about. And it brought up parts of me, old pain, old wounds, things from the past that I haven't even known were still there. And through meditation, I watched those heal. I didn't heal them. I watched them heal, because that's what we learn in meditation, isn't it, Paul, to watch, to just observe this process that goes on inside us when we allow it. And so I watched my own healing, and I was amazed and comforted, and my walking improved. And over the course of a year, I grew out of taking my MS meds. So now I'm not taking any meds. My walking has improved, and it's still improving. But the other thing I discovered by going more deeply inside is that at our essence, at our essential core, is the unconditional love that we all say we want. Because there's nothing better. We all say, oh, accepting unconditional love, that's what I want. And that already exists in us. We don't have to work. We don't have to earn it. We don't have to find it. We don't have to impress God and say, gimme, gimme, gimme. It's already existing inside us. We have to move into it. And we have such resistance to doing that. That seems funny, doesn't it? But we resist moving that deeply inside ourselves. So that's what accepting unconditional love is about. How we get in our own way, how we resist moving into the unconditional love that already exists at our center, and how we can open up, how we can facilitate it. So what you said at the beginning, there is one sentence that we can focus on, and they're pithy sentences. I mean, it's wonderful to read a few pages, and the first half of the book is text, understanding what these principles are, understanding what it means to apply them in personal terms, and then we do the work. Then we focus on consciousness, because this is all about consciousness. It's not behavior. It's not doing. It's not receiving from outside ourselves. It's our consciousness allowing us to move to that deepest place in us where we experience our oneness with Source. That's what we learn in our New Thought churches and our New Thought lessons, and allow healing, because Source always knows how to heal us. Source always shows us what the path is for healing in completely personal terms. I don't have to follow anyone's direction or do what somebody did 100 years ago or even what somebody did today. Healing comes to me in my own way, very personally, but I have to pay attention. So first I have to move to that deepest place inside me, and that will happen as I meditate, as I allow. I'll be carried there. Then I have to pay attention, because then I want to maintain that consciousness that allows healing. And that's what the statements in the second half of the book show us how to do. We can practice one statement every day.
Well, let's do it right now. I've just opened to page 191. It says, just for today, don't play it safe. That's a good one, isn't it? And here we go. So just for today, in other words, there is only today, isn't there? Actually, there's only this this moment. So we're becoming present to the only moment that actually exists, which is now. So just for today, don't play it safe. I love that, because you talk about this all throughout the book. You know, play big, right? Go big, because
right.
unconditional love is vast. It fills the universe. Why settle for something small and mean? You know, why be safe? Everything that you gain that's good is a risk, isn't it? You have to risk. Don't play it safe. Stretch. Go beyond your conditioning, right?
Right. At our very basic core, we are one with Source. And Source isn't puny. Source isn't little. Source is huge. We are one with Source. I mean, and that blows me away. So, no, I'm not going to pretend like I'm nice and like I'm just a nice little person walking around on Earth. I have amazing power, access to amazing power inside me. Sometimes I think of it as like living in this mansion, but we don't turn the lights on. There's this electricity that's available to us, but we don't turn the lights on because we don't plug in to that source of power, which is greater than who we are. All we have to do is turn the lights on, and we do that by meditating, by moving into our center, and by allowing. So when we allow Source to work in our lives, that's pretty exciting. Then we get in the back seat of the car and we just watch. We just see how we're driven around. We just see how we're carried because we're not in control anymore. And I think that's the most exciting way to live there is. So I am so grateful at this point for having that diagnosis. I thought it was the worst thing that had ever happened to me. And now I realize it's the best thing that's ever happened to me because it threw me into living with greater depth than I could even imagine. And life is so much fun when you allow Source to drive the car. Don't you agree?
I think we become complacent, don't we? We have a nice little life and everything seems to be going along okay. And we feel we have a certain amount of wisdom. Perhaps, you know, I've been practicing for many years. Maybe, you know, I've been doing psychotherapy in your case and I'm pretty good at it, etc. And you know, you think life's pretty darn good, and then these things happen that sort of shake us to the foundations, and we think, why me, Lord? But then after a while, after the work that you've done, you realize, why not me? You know, this was perfect for me to open up to something larger. But it is a risk, isn't it? We are shaken to the core. There's a radical work going on here when we truly embrace spirit. It's not fun, and I think that's why we don't want to do it. You know, why we settle for second best or whatever, because we're scared of being overwhelmed. You know, that the ego is no longer to be in control. And you talk a lot about this. You call it the controller, right? It's the part of us that wants to stay in charge of everything, you know, because it's a scary world out there. And you know, I've got my comfortable little life, you know, don't bug me. So it's hard to move beyond the controller. How have you done that?
Well, I had to do it because my feelings were so strong and I was scared to death with this diagnosis. And I didn't have, there's nothing like getting a diagnosis that helps you feel your solitariness more because it's my body. And I'm not going to hate my body. I love my body and I want to support myself on every level. But there's nobody right in this with me, you know? So what could I do? What could I do except go deeper and deeper inside? So the controller is the part of us that tells us to follow the rules, to stay in our heads, to avoid vulnerability. Avoid vulnerability. That's always the message of the controller. Well, there's no way I could avoid vulnerability. You know, everybody was expecting me to decline more and more and more and more, and kindly but patiently watching me, ready for me to decline. And I just didn't want that, but I was scared to death. So I don't know how you get past that controller if you don't have a hole torn in you, you know, if something doesn't shake you to your core. Because we can't, I don't think we can in our own will, in our own mind, say, oh, yes, I'll do this work and then just snap our fingers and have it happen. I think when we say, oh, yes, I'll do this work, I'm available, then we're inviting the universe to play with us. And then we don't know what's going to happen. But that's the time to stay present and to say thank you instead of saying no, 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 no. Because like you say, we cannot go for comfort. Being comfortable is the opposite of being present. And my books are about living with passion. Don't you think? Living with passion, being present in the moment, saying yes to whatever happens to us, saying I'm available. I know I'm in partnership with Source. And I'm going to see what this is about. What am I supposed to learn from this? So everything that happens is a yes and a thank you. So there's nothing to resist. But you're right, there's that hump initially where we have to say, I'm no longer in control. And it's scary.
Yeah.
It's
right.
Really scary. I've even seen, and I was thinking about this yesterday, you know, I do a guided meditation group and invite people to come, and if they don't know how to meditate, I will say some words, a few prompts every once in a while to help them stay focused. And some folks try to use their intellectual constructs, the way they've used their structure, their lives, and they try to use meditation in that context to get them what they want. Instead of practicing surrender, it's like they don't have a hole torn in them yet. And so they talk about meditation, and they talk about those people that they judge and those people who do this and those people who do that. And on my better days, I just laugh and say, you know, there's a whole deeper level in this whole thing. We don't use meditation to get us where we want. We let meditation carry us where Source knows we can go. And that's very humble. And it's definitely not comfortable.
You know, there's a direct experience of life, isn't there? And then there's the conceptualized experience of life. You know, and our minds tend to conceptualize things. So therefore, we're not actually on the cutting edge of experiencing anything. We're looking at it, but not with the spiritual self, which is the observer self, but with the intellectual or controller self. So it's always keeping us one step away from actuality, right? So then we can never have a real experience because we're always looking at you know, the event in an analytical way. And although, you know, that's wonderful to have an analytical mind, it does keep us from truly being alive. You can't have a successful relationship with someone if you're always analyzing all the time, right? It has to be visceral and immediate. And I think it's the same way with a true relationship with our own being. You know, it has to be real. And like you say, so often we need these shocks or the suffering of life to wake us up, because to throw us out of our complacency or our conceptualizing. You know, you can't conceptualize pain when you're feeling it directly. You know, you certainly can later, but in the moment of it, you know, it's real and visceral and actually can open us up more than, say, a beautiful aha moment, you know, which may be lovely, but it doesn't have the same, perhaps, immediacy that terror does. So, you know, terror can often, I think it was Rilke that said that, wasn't it? That, the, you know, angels are beautiful as long as we don't hold them too close, you know, then they become terrifying or whatever. I'm paraphrasing, but it's the same idea, you know, that the God is incredibly, or Source, or whatever we want to call it, is way more terrifying than anything else. And I don't mean that in a negative sense, but in the sense that it burns us, it wakes us, it eviscerates us, and you know, it takes away all that isn't real and pares it down to what's actual.
Right, and that is terrifying, and it's wonderful, and it's exciting, and it's thrilling, and it's passionate. And once you've been through it, you won't live any other way. But we can't hold on to anything. I mean, there is no control. So you have to get over that first, oh no, what am I doing moment.
And
surrender, and then you wouldn't want to live any other way. Why not be in partnership with Source? Why not let God drive the car? Why not make everything you can out of this experience of life? I mean, what a thrill. What an adventure.
Absolutely. Folks, I'm talking with Ruth Cherry. She's just written the book, which is the second in the series, about her approach to MS and the wisdom that she's learned to, and I know she knew it before, but this the the personal application of it and allowing of it that's fascinating. And it's called Accepting Unconditional Love. We're going to go to a break and listen to these messages from Unity. When we come back, I want to talk about some of the key terminology that Ruth uses. We've talked about the controller. Rather than God, she often uses the word source throughout the book, or presence, and also the importance of vibration. So when we come back, we'll take a look at those terms. Join us after these messages from Unity.
Wouldn't you like to share the programs that inspire you most with audiences around the world? That's easier than ever with mobile giving. Just text Unity Radio to 72727 and help us continue offering spiritual programs that change lives.
Weather forecasters can provide guesstimates based on scientific data, but in the end, we cannot know with absolute certainty what the weather will be until we live it. Life works the same way. We may think we know what's going to happen, expecting the best while preparing for the worst. We can keep a positive frame of mind and weather any storm because we are one with the ever-present miracle-working power of God. We are mightier than any circumstance on this earth because we are divine in nature and a part of the eternal. We live in a world where we can realize our possibilities because we know that with God, all things are possible. And the way to keep our hearts and minds centered and focused on divine potentialities is through prayer. As author Frances W. Foulkes wrote in her book, Effectual Prayer, "If the time of achievement seems long, pray. If the way seems dark, pray. If the results seem delayed, pray. Morning, noon, and night, pray. Pray without ceasing."
This Mindful Moment is brought to you by Daily Word Magazine. For more than 90 years, Daily Word has helped people of all faiths live healthy, prosperous, and meaningful lives. Take advantage of our 30-day free trial of the digital edition. You'll receive access to the online magazine, a daily email with the word for the day, and the Daily Word app. To sign up for the 30-day free trial, visit unityonlineradio.org/dailyword. Been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm with Ruth Cherry, PhD, and she's written a book called Accepting Unconditional Love, which we all want, of course, don't we? It's lovely, the idea of it, unconditional love, love without judgment or limits. But it's not always easy to accept that because we have so much self-loathing sometimes, or it seems like too big a task to step beyond our comfort zone, or life becomes a boring blah thing, and I don't really want to extend beyond into something greater. But unfortunately, we have numerous self-sabotaging mechanisms, which Ruth calls the controller, and that controller is like a hard taskmaster, isn't it? Always making us feel less than. And of course, once we're in touch with Source, as she calls it, and the presence, we could call it Spirit, God, whatever. Then we're in much of a more playful place. You know, I like to think of Jesus having a lot of fun, right? He was laughing and dancing, and they said he was enjoyed his drink and enjoyed his food. I think a lot of that's been excised from the Gospels, but I think if you get under the surface of things, you can see that he was in touch with that playful quality, which is the nature of Spirit moving in us, right? It's a dance, isn't it?
That is, and that's so fun, isn't it, when you think of it that way and you can see that image. And certainly that's how we all want to see ourselves, as effervescent and enthusiastic and dancing and alive and present here. But we get into thinking, well, I better not offend anybody. I should be good. I should do this. I should. And really the controller, the part of us that gives us our shoulds, is only for doing behaviors. Like, it's good to take care of your car, and it's good to change the oil, and it's good to know how much money you have in your checking account. And it's good to do some certain things, to wash your clothes on time, but that's all that your controller should be in charge of, taking care of the house and the car and the money. But somehow the controller has gotten involved with our being. How can I be okay? Well, the controller doesn't know how to be. The controller just knows how to do. So when we say to the controller, I want to be happier, life is too hard, I'm in too much pain, tell me how to be okay, the controller says, well, eat some ice cream or exercise every day or do something, look good, tell jokes, be fun. The controller can only talk about behavior, but really what we want is being, is essence, is self-acceptance. Self-acceptance is so hard for us. It's amazing because we always say, I want someone to love me. And when we're young, we're looking for someone who will love us completely, unconditionally, but we don't love ourselves that way. It's like, when I lose this next 10 pounds, when I make some more money, next year when I have it together. But we're not self-accepting. Generally, we're not self-accepting, and we feel good about it. We say, well, I just want to make myself better. That's how I get better, by criticizing myself. Some of us feel like we're constantly criticizing ourselves, like being inside our own heads is not such a comfortable place to be. It's like, who's in charge here? Who's living my life?
Yeah, really.
And we
believe, I think,
go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say another aspect of the controller is, you know, always wanting results. You know, there's an ulterior motive, isn't there? It's not good enough the way it is right now, but if I do certain things the right way, people will like me, I'll have more money, you know, I'll be happy, basically. And always about later. That's the sort of fascism of this, isn't it? It's putting off our good till a later time. You know, it's like planned fun. You know, you go to a place where all the fun's been planned out for you, and you're supposed to have a whale of a time. If I go to those places, I feel miserable because, you know, people are forcing me to have fun all the time. I just want to be spontaneous and enjoying, escape from all the crowds that are having fun, you know, fun. And I think our society has become more controlling in that regard. You know, we've taken everything that used to be spontaneous and paved it, like the old song, you know, you paved paradise and put up a parking lot. You know, it's like, stop, I just want to be, you know, spontaneously ordinary I remember Edward Abbey, you know, the great conservationist and out of the box thinker. You know, he had to leave the place where he was a park ranger because it was getting too developed. You know, they were bringing in too many roads for the tourists and everything. We could go out there and say, it still looks pretty primitive to me. But to him, you know, he didn't want anything. He didn't want any roads whatsoever. But I think it goes crazy the way we over program everything. Okay, I'm sorry, I got on a bit of a soapbox there with that. You can tell that's a hot issue for me. But you know, it's true though, isn't it? Yeah.
But isn't it? Because we're here to walk our own individual path, you know?
Right.
And if we're walking down a path that's already been paved, chances are it's not our own individual path. But isn't that amazing if we were to sit, to be still, and to say to Source or God or Spirit, show me my path, show me my way, and then follow, and then say, I don't know where you're going, but I'm on board, I'm right here. And I think that's an exciting way to live, but that's what you're talking about.
Right.
But how many of us are going to sit still and listen? And that's what we do in meditation. We sit still and we listen and we say, show me, show me. And first you have to be still. before you can find out what your path is, before you can pay attention. And that in itself is a challenge for a lot of us, to sit still, to stop talking, to look at our thoughts without thinking our thoughts, and to be humble and receptive.
And now, to put the phone down as well, right?
Turn the phone off, yeah.
Turn the phone off, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And say, I'm not going to do anything but be present to myself for the next 20 minutes, because we're so flattered. We so love it when somebody says, you have my complete attention. Whatever you say, I am right here. I am here for you right now. And we love it when someone pays attention to us that way, but we don't do that for ourselves, not very often.
Right.
And for those of us who meditate, I understand why we don't do that for ourselves. Because the first thing that comes up, not the first thing, is after about 3 months, you have this good meditation practice going for about 3 months, well, then all your unhealed stuff starts to come up. And it's like, whoa, where's this coming from? But you know it's your own because it's been in there, and you know it's been in there forever. But meditation will heal it, and all we have to do is allow.
Right.
So first we stay silent, then we allow source. Then we pay attention, huh? And then we always say yes and go with whatever we're shown. And when you're talking about walking your own path and getting off the pavement, that's what we have to do first, don't you think? Pay attention?
Absolutely. You know, but that's the only thing Jesus talked about, didn't he? He said, watch and pray. You know, all the great saints from the East talk about it, you know, being still and quiet and just notice what's going on. Unfortunately, sometimes we can conceptualize about that too. You know, Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche back in the 70s, you know, the great crazy wisdom Tibetan master, you know, called it spiritual materialism. You know, we take even spiritual ideas and materialize them. We make them into concepts. And I think... you know, the observer or the witness can turn into a concept rather than the spontaneous watching or looking, you know, because then we're like searching for the witness, you know, and it becomes another part of the controller rather than the simple elegance of being present to what is. So there's always a danger. Actually, I was having lunch with a professor of well-being, and he's a Buddhist scholar. He's going to be on my show later in the year, John Dunn, and I was talking about the witness, and he's in his theology, he likes to leave everything out that is non-essential, and he says, why do you have to bring a witness in here? You know, just be what it is. It doesn't have to be labeled. And it kind of took me aback, because I've always used that phrase, the witness, you know, as a shorthand for this observer self. But I thought, maybe he's right. You know, even that can be a construct around reality rather than the direct experience itself. You know, it's hard to be naked, isn't it? Spiritually or physically, it's hard to take all the protection off and just simply be here.
Just to be present, just to show up and say, I'm here. This is who I am right now, this second. I'm present.
Right.
Oh, yeah. And then we see what happens next. Because all we have to do is show up, isn't it? We don't have to do anything. We don't have to be good enough. We don't have to be prepared. We just have to show up. And then allow something. Allow God, allow Source. And something always happens. It's not a matter of showing up and being bored, sitting in silence and having nothing happen. Something always happens. I think that's the scary part of meditation, not that it's boring, but that it's not boring at all. There's too much going on, you know? We look at that feeling. We look at that unhealed wound. We look at this dynamic and we go, oh, whoa, there's so much going on inside me. I think I better go do something. Maybe I should clean the house. Anything to push away what it is to be present to ourselves. Because inside us, in our inner worlds, I think that's scarier than the outer world for a lot of people. Just being still.
You know, I think it is boring to the controller. You know, the controller wants to be endlessly entertained by either good or bad information. It doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. As long as there's entertainment going on, and you know, when we're in meditation, just being present, it's definitely boring to that part of us. I remember a teacher telling me, you know, a Buddhist teacher, he says, "Well, we're not born again Christians; we are bored again Buddhists." And I took his point, you know, that, you know, I've got to be bored, I've got to go through the boredom barrier, boring to my humanness, but joyful and open to my spirit, because it's like we can't even see the wonder until we turn off all the you know, the aspects that condition us to having to take things in a certain way. You have to let go of that, right? It's a releasing of expectation, if you like.
Absolutely, and we can't do things in the same old way. So that when we talk about moving inside and being still, that's the only way we can accept unconditional love. We can't accept unconditional love from our controllers, from always being entertained, from being in the world, from looking, from thinking, from interacting with the external world. We can only accept unconditional love by going inside and being still and allowing unconditional love. Now, sometimes we have to get through a whole lot of steps before we get to the unconditional love part. We have to allow ourselves to be healed. But this is wonderful and this is exciting. It's like, for me, the healing was MS. But there are other people, you know, they have addictions, they have hurts from childhood, they have wounds of one kind or another. We all have some challenge. So accepting unconditional love will let us heal, will allow the healing for us to happen for whatever we're concerned with. Maybe it's wanting to be a star. Maybe it's wanting to make money. Maybe it's whatever. But if we move to that deepest core essential place in us, we can allow healing. And then we allow, because accepting unconditional love is what heals us. That's what heals us for all of us. Moving into unconditional love that already exists at our core. It's already there. That blows me away, you know, that it's already there and exists in me this second. I just have to allow it.
And it exists.
Pardon me?
I was going to say it exists in you even if you die. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? In the sense that Lazarus, for instance, died, didn't he, again? Jesus brought him back to life, but what happened to him later? Well, he died. And we don't say, oh, no, that's terrible, because Jesus brought him back to life. The point being is that he was brought back to live life to the full, however long that was going to be. And, you know, you're dealing with MS, which, you know, it may be in remission now. God knows, it may come back. We don't know. But if it does, it's not about you being cured of MS, presumably, or any of us being cured of the fact we're going to die. It's how do we approach this, right? So once you've made that breakthrough into accepting unconditional love, yes, it can lead to healing often. But even if it doesn't lead to physical healing, we are healed, right? There's a difference between a cure and a healing, I believe. My first wife died of breast cancer, and you know, it wasn't long after she was diagnosed that she died. It was less than 2 years, but I feel that she was healed at the end of her life, you know, that and she was a great example to many in our community, because she embraced something that she'd never embraced previously in her life. And so even though the cancer took her physically, it didn't take her spiritually. And I think she's still an inspiration to many, because she was literally a light being, you know, at the end of her life, because she had allowed healing to come into her. So I think this is an important point too. You know, it's not about, well, we're all going to be healed and then we're just going to suffer anymore. It's not about that, is it? It's about shining even in the midst of difficulty, if you like.
Of whatever is going on. Finding, as you say, your wife found a healing inside herself. Regardless
yes.
of the illness, that's our controller that says, well, healing means I don't have this illness anymore.
Right.
The truth is the healing is much deeper than that. And maybe you can put this into better words than I can, but I think it's focusing more on our non-physical being than our physical being. That healing comes with integrating these two parts of ourselves, the human part and the eternal part of us, and spending time in the eternal part of who we are and allowing that. And that's something for each of us every day. And no matter what the issue is, no matter what the issue is, and maybe it's just how am I going to get through today, I've got too much to do, or maybe it's a long-term goal, or maybe it's living with more depth, but moving into our essence in our eternal core, I think is always the answer. Don't you?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You talk a lot about vibration in the book, and obviously right. Your first book talks about that as well. Tell us what you understand vibration to be.
Well, we are all practicing some vibrational frequency all the time. All the time. So let's know what we're practicing. We know what the vibrational frequency of anger feels like. We know what the frequency of, I got to get this done, I got too much to do, I got to forge ahead, that controller stuff feels like. We also have places inside ourselves where we don't go anymore. Maybe there was a time in your life when you felt powerless, when you felt overwhelmed, and when you were vulnerable and taken advantage of, and you said, I'm not going there anymore. It's like, that's a frequency I will not feel. Well, just because I say I will not feel it doesn't mean it goes away. So we're practicing this frequency of being cut off from who we are, not allowing some healing from something that happened earlier in our lives. We distort our oneness, our wholeness, our integrity by saying, I don't want to go to this place in me. I don't want to feel powerless. I don't want to let them see my vulnerability, or whatever it is we cut off. We all have something different that we're cutting off. But when we cut off our wholeness, we affect our vibrational frequency. And if we're not vibrating at the frequency of source, we're pushing life away, and we're pushing healing away, and we're pushing unconditional love away. So we want to maintain an integrity inside ourselves, being present to who we are this second in every aspect of who we are. I'm scared, and I'm not capable, and I don't do this so well, but that's who it is. That's me. That's who I am this second. I'm not trying to pretend like I'm something else. I'm simply practicing the vibrational frequency of me this second and allowing that frequency to be healed and to be raised through meditation, through allowing source to be a bigger part of our lives, which we do when we go to our deepest eternal center. All humans have a human center, our personality, our controller, and our eternal center. Our experience of source, which allows healing, is integrating the two. So always when we move deeper and deeper into our essential core, the unconditional love that exists at our center, we're affecting our vibrational frequency, and that's what allows healing. That's what we want to do. I think that's what we want to do all our lives. And that's the way that I would interpret your sentence about your wife, that she practiced a clear vibrational frequency.
Yes.
By allowing that deeper part of herself to come through, regardless of what showed on the surface.
Yes. You know, I remember being in India when I was in my early 20s, and I'd run out of money, and I was sitting on the hill overlooking beautiful bay there in Bombay on the Malabar Gardens, and the sense I think I had some money still back in Britain, and it was kind of have come eventually, but at that moment I was down to nothing and I wasn't going to get some money for a while, but I had this intense feeling of freedom. It was scary, you know, not having any sustenance. But on the other hand, it was trusting that everything was going to be well. I thought, my goodness, you know, I'm 6,000 miles from home or whatever, 10,000 miles. It's the furthest distance I've ever been in my life. Here I am, alone and in this strange place. And yet all is well. You know, I trusted spirit, that spirit would be there for me, and I was guided and guarded by that presence. And, you know, it was a wonderful feeling, and I've always held on to it because I thought, you know, that came when you didn't have any constructs around you of protection, but you had a greater protection. And remember this, Paul, because that greater protection is always with you. You know, that is the unconditional love that enfolds us. And it was a wonderful moment in my life path. You know, I was definitely on a spiritual journey at that time. And that was a confirmation, I think, of the presence there.
Right, because you allowed yourself to be without anything that you could do to protect yourself. You allowed yourself to be undefended and present and totally available to Source. Totally,
yes.
Available. You were. I mean, that was all you had going for you, wasn't it? Your oneness,
yeah.
With God, your relationship with God, and you have to get to that. I call it the bottom of the barrel to experience that, you know, and it's so powerful, isn't it? It's so amazing that it's really okay. It's really okay. Being where I am is really okay, even though I have nothing. It looks like I'm not going anywhere, and it's really okay because I'm accepting the unconditional love. I'm one with Source. I mean, or sometimes I talk about being in partnership, like God is my partner, sort of mixing our metaphors. But experiencing that you experience, allowing yourself to get to that undefended place where you couldn't take care of yourself, that's it, isn't it? That's the essence. That's what life is about. And that's being totally alive, I think, totally passionate, totally committed to the moment.
And right.
Exciting.
You know, they say, you know, the God being, you know, your co-pilot. And of course, the old joke is, you know, if God's your co-pilot, change seats, right? Because we don't want God to be the co-pilot. We want God to be the pilot. I mean, that's the true force. But I guess, you know, you have to start somewhere. You know, at least you've let God into the cockpit, right? So there's a move in the right direction. Eventually, there's the total surrender and trust, you know, in allowing God to be the one who is doing everything. Because actually, God is doing everything, whether we allow it or not. You've got a great line on page 127 that says, "The universe delivers miracles when we release our resistance." That really sums it up, doesn't it? The universe delivers miracles when we release our resistance. Resistance to what?
To life, to being vulnerable, to not knowing what we're doing, to letting go of our controller.
Baby,
right. Isn't that a wonderful way to think of it, about this is how the universe normally operates, you know, with one miracle after another miracle after another miracle, and we're the one that slows it down. We're the one that has to make the universe be reasonable or predictable or acceptable to our neighbors or not embarrass us in public. But really, if we just allow the universe to be the universe and do its work, it's one miracle after another. And we
Absolutely.
Pay attention and we go, wow, wow. And we're just amazed all the time. But we're not trying to be reasonable. We have to let go of being reasonable. And that's our most common form of resistance, don't you think? We're being reasonable, and we're being appropriate, and we're doing what we should do, and we fit in, and we're being respectable. But that's
another way. We're being grown-ups. You know, it's important. I'm an adult now. I've got to be a grown-up. But, of course, you know, being a grown-up doesn't necessarily mean you're an adult, because an adult, a true adult, can be childlike, right? A true adult embraces all aspects of who we are, which can be extremely dependable and that kind of person, but also extremely spontaneous and childlike and open to wonders and miracles. So it's a both-and universe, isn't it? We don't jettison the one just because we've become the other. So and I think many people forget this, you know, and they can only experience their child in socially kind of inappropriate ways, you know, getting wasted or doing crazy things instead of doing it in elegant, loving, wonderful ways. Because I think we have a lot of ways we return to childhood, but I don't think they're necessarily always healthy.
That's a wonderful point. I like that word, inelegant. We should all be inelegant a minute or two every day, shouldn't we? But the idea of allowing the fun, allowing the life, allowing the enthusiasm to move through us, and we don't stop it, and we watch where it goes, and we watch where it carries us. like being a painter. I don't know what's going to happen on the canvas, but wow, isn't that fun to watch? And we can do that with our own lives, with our own consciousness, because that's really the canvas that we're working with, isn't it? Our own consciousness, seeing what's coming through us. It's not what we make of our own lives, what we allow our own lives to show us, how we allow ourselves to be carried. And our consciousness is our playground. So we want to play in our consciousness and allow the inelegant parts of us to carry us and to be childlike or to be adults and appropriate and creative and spontaneous. Yeah, to allow, to dance with Source, to play our way through lives.
You have a great quote on page 112. It says, we experience oneness with Source consciously, and that confirms and makes meaningful our experience. There are no accidents. And I like this last sentence. It says, we can appreciate the truth of even the most mundane aspects of our experience if we focus. And that's so true to me, you know, because I don't have to go to Yosemite to be inspired. I can look in a mud puddle, you know, or a corner, or in something ordinary, some little event, some little passing gesture between two people, and they become wonders and miracles too, right? It's the appreciation of the seemingly ordinary that becomes extraordinary because of our awareness of it. And I think this is the most beautiful thing, you know, that so often we're searching for the ultimate. Whereas the joy and the ultimate joy is within us. It's all around us in the seemingly ordinary events. I've shared this before. There's a movie called Big Night. Stanley Tucci is in it. It's about two brothers and they're opening a restaurant in New York, whatever. But at the end, they have a sort of a cathartic experience on the beach, but one of the brothers comes back early in the morning and he cooks himself an omelet, and the camera just watches him cooking this omelet. I don't think there's even any sound. It's just enthralled by the activity of making this omelet, and it's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen on screen because it's so true. It's the moment of pure joy in doing that simple task, right? And we are invited into that moment. He does it with such a grace. I've always remembered that moment in that movie as being, you know, very spiritual, because that's what we're about. It's doing the simple, ordinary things in such a way that they become, you know, you can label it if you like. They become sacred. There we go. That's a good word to use.
Mm-hmm. We make these moments sacred by our attention to them, by paying attention. Yeah, and that, I mean, that's exhilarating,
isn't it? Absolutely.
Every moment can be sacred if we pay attention, if we're available.
Yeah.
Then folks, what else is there? That's it.
Folks, it's lucky that's it, because we're at the end of the show. I hope we've demonstrated some things for you and piqued your interest. If you want to get hold of this book, of course, it's available in all the usual outlets. It's called Accepting Unconditional Love by Ruth Cherry, PhD. Ruth, you have your own website, do you, if people want to go find out more about you?
My website is meditationintro.com. There's 16 videos on the website, 5 guided meditations, lots of articles, lots of book reviews. Hope they go.
There we go. Yeah, and you'll find it very, very worthwhile, I think. And the invitation is to allow the wonder and the joy and the expansive beauty that you are to express, and not to hide your light under a bushel anymore. Don't let the controller control every aspect of your life, but burst forth into a spontaneous living. Release the imprisoned splendor, as Robert Browning put it so many years ago. But I always love that image, because that splendor is within us, and our joyous task is to release it. And not always wait till trauma hacks a hole in the chest so that we have to release it, but release it from our own volition. It's been a joy. In 30 seconds, Ruth, just putting you on the line here, in 30 seconds, give some final wisdom to our listeners.
I am so grateful for this opportunity to be with you, Paul, and to be with the listeners, because I am absolutely thrilled about this book, Accepting Unconditional Love. It was the easiest thing that I have ever done. It was creative. I didn't do it. I just sat there and watched as it happened. So I was overjoyed to watch the book write itself, and I'd love to share that with everyone, that joy, and I'd love to hear your reactions to it. Write to me on my website, Meditation Intro. This has just been a wonderful experience writing the book, and it's been a wonderful experience talking with you, Paul, and having this chance to be with the listeners. Thank you so much.
All right, let's tell you about next week, and then we'll say goodbye to Ruth. Next week is Election Day, so my wife Wendy is joining me, and we're going to talk about staying centered in stressful times. Yeah, how to allow presence to be present for us and not let the controller drive us crazy, if you like to use some of Ruth's terminology. So this will be practical for Election Day, but any day where we want to stay centered and poised in the truth of our being. So join me and Wendy next week for that. And right now, I want to thank Ruth for being with us. What a wonderful show. Thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you. I'm glad to be with you.
And thanks for listening, folks. See you next week. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world, and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Are you ready for deeper spiritual breakthroughs? Have you wondered how to apply spiritual principles to your everyday life in practical ways? Do you feel your soul is calling you to deeper purposes? Join Reverend Galen McDowell live every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Central for Truth Transforms, a discussion on how God within you, as you, is the power to transform your life. If you really believe that consciousness determines your experiences and that you are an individualized expression of God, join us as we help awaken and transform the consciousness of humanity. We will discuss, through lecture, live interviews, and call-in questions, spiritual healing, prayer, prosperity, forgiveness, new thought views about eternal life, and much more. The world is waiting for your truth transformation, only on Unity Online Radio.
Our words are one of the instruments with which we build our world. Everything is composed of energy in unique configurations of vibrations. Scientists tell us that sound vibrations affect physical matter. Think for a moment. What happens to your face and your body when you speak with joy, with concern, in anger, with excitement? A woman once described her feelings about the consoling comments of a friend. Your words reached out to me like a lifeline. Realizing how much you cared helped me know I didn't need to feel alone. When we recognize their power, we realize the wisdom of paying closer attention to the words we use and how we use them. Get into the habit of thinking before you speak. You'll never regret it. This Law of Life is brought to you by Unity.
To find a Unity Church near you, visit www.unity.org.
Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.